Hello and welcome back to the Journeyman Podcast. I'm Matt Reeves.
And I'm Joseph Corlett.
Join us as we travel from club to club, delve into the stories, tales and myths that have helped define the ethos and identities of football clubs all around the world.
We'll look at club history from all angles, whether it be the team's tactical style, superstitious fan rituals or discussing the best players to grace the shirts.
From our base in Berlin, we aspire to give clubs of all sizes a platform to discuss their greatest triumphs and toughest heartbreaks.
We'll take you through fascinating untold stories with tales of heroes, villains, promotions, relegations and everything in between.
You join us back here. And our Aberdeen story, part two. Last time out, we ended with Alex Ferguson, who has achieved a ridiculous amount of success in Aberdeen.
We talked about their European Cup run to Gothenburg and winning the league title under Dave Halliday as well.
Yeah, so like we say, Ferguson's gone, and it comes as no real surprise that Aberdeen, after that, did struggle to compete with Celtic and a resurgent Rangers. And they actually signed new co-managers in 1989, pairing Alex Smith and Jockey Scott.
A number of foreign players were even signed, including Dutch internationals Theo Schneiders and Hans Gilhuis.
Theo Schneiders was actually a very successful replacement for long-serving keeper Jin Leighton. He had a really good first season at Pittodrie and actually won the Scottish PFA's Player of the Year in 1989. Hans Gilhuis had actually arrived from PSV after having been relegated to the bench due to a new signing, a Brazilian by the name of Romario. So he signed for Aberdeen for £650,000, made an immediate impact on his debut, getting two goals, including an overhead kick as well, against Dunfermline. He followed this with the game's only goal against Rangers. So, you know, talk about introducing yourself to the fans early on.
What a way to ingratiate yourself to the Pittodrie faithful. Despite Ferguson leaving, the legacy of him was still left an imprint on the club, and in the 1989-90 season, the club still won the Scottish Cup and the Scottish League Cup. However, in the following season, they would lose the last game of the season and therefore the title to Rangers, their big rivals.
By 1992, a familiar name comes back on the scene, Willie Miller, who'd been a stalwart of Fergie's Aberdeen teams, an absolute legend, played nearly 800 games. He comes back as manager and presides over a few seasons where Aberdeen come close to winning the title. But yeah, he's a real legend returning, and someone who was actually, in 2003, he was voted the greatest Aberdeen player of all time in a poll with the fans.
He would join Aberdeen in 1971 at the age of 16 and go on loan and impress at Peterhead in the Highland League, scoring 24 goals. However, weirdly, he was recalled back, obviously, great form, and then he was strangely converted to become a central defender or a sweeper in the reserves by Teddy Scott.
He goes on to establish himself in that position and ends up being captain of the team in 1975 at the age of just 21. So the conversion worked, but a bit of a random one.
He was a stalwart at the back of the defence for all of the period under Sir Alex Ferguson, and he would even return to the club in the summer of 2004 as a director and play a pivotal role in developing the youth academy at Aberdeen.
What more can you say? An absolute legend, player, manager, helping sort the academy out. True legend in every sense of the word. But he was actually in charge in the 93-94 season, the Cup Winners' Cup second round, where Aberdeen would face Torino.
This one's worth mentioning purely for the scoreline over the two legs, as Torino would win, unfortunately, 5-3, but wow, how many goals?
Absolute goal fest. And just looking at the Torino team, one of the names that immediately just jumped out at me, Benito Carbone. I'm sure everyone will remember with Paolo Di Canio with those terrible promo photos with the spaghetti and raw, horrible-looking pizza, which I think in a way it's almost like, I'm sure it's racism, I would say, you know. You sign two Italians, let's go get like some horrible frozen pizza and some spaghetti from
there. Cultural appropriation.
And also the fact they're Italian as well, and they see this probably this rancid, horrible pizza from Asda, and they're just like, this is not a pizza.
No, yeah, definitely not.
But yeah.
But back to Aberdeen, they would unfortunately lose 3-2 away at the Stadio dell'Alpi, an amazing, classical Italian stadium, huge stadium.
You can actually watch the full game on YouTube, which Joey did. And
it was great the first 10 minutes, though. It looks like there's something wrong with the video because there's just so much flare fog just covering the screen. It's just amazing. It's an amazing atmosphere, to be fair.
Aberdeen thriving in that atmosphere, going 2-0 up. Goal from Finnish striker Miksu Patalainen, and a sliding finish on the counter from Owen Jess as well. And another two interesting characters. Patalainen, he'd play for Dundee before playing 91 times for Aberdeen, but then goes on to play for like Bolton, Wolves, Hibs, St Johnston, St Mirren, and then has like a very journeyman-esque managerial career as well, which is still going to this day. So just a few of these clubs. You've got Cowdenbeath, TPS, which is a Finnish club, Hibernian Kilmarnock, the Finland national team, Dundee United, Ubon UMT United, which is a Thai club, the Latvian national team, and is now the Hong Kong national team manager. So that is very good journeyman standard.
Nomadic.
Owen Jess, slightly different, you know, a bit more loyalty and longevity there with 314 appearances for Aberdeen. Slightly different take on
from one end of the spectrum to the other.
But sadly, three goals for Torino from Rafael Sergio, Daniele Fortunato, 88th minute winner directly from a 30-yard free kick by Carlos Aguilera, would win it in Italy for the Italian side.
So a comeback was needed in Scotland. The atmosphere lived up to the stereotypes of Scotland, as it's absolutely pissing down and incredibly windy. This is what we were meaning by the Pedodri wind, with the Torino shirts flapping in the wind. The Italians who travelled all that way must have been thinking, what the hell are we doing here?
Carbone must have enjoyed it a little bit and thinking, yeah, I could live around here. You know, I just need some horrible frozen pizza and horrible pasta and I could do this.
With 12 minutes on the clock, the ball would smack off a Torino player before falling into the path of an onrushing Lee Richardson 25 yards out from goal. He would smash it into the top left-hand corner and send the home fans wild.
Yeah, but step up Carbone, who almost like single-handedly makes sure Torino are going to go through. Takes the ball down in the Aberdeen penalty area, swivels away from the defender before the shot he takes is bundled in by Fortunato just before half-time. And then in the early stage of the second half, some real magic where he'd take the ball down from a throw-in and like just nothing on at all. And with a little turn of pace through the gap, he looks to cross the ball in. Aberdeen defender dares to stand him up, which is not a great idea. Two dummies and another swivel later, and he's created space for himself and puts a teasing ball into the box, which is met by Andrea Silenzi, thumping header, and that's it for the tie and Aberdeen's European adventures for another year.
As you said, you joked about the weather, but he was just like, no, we are getting out of here with two goals single-handedly. It was an amazing performance, to be fair, and unfortunate for the Aberdeen faithful.
The run made willingly again by Patalainen, followed by Gregucci. It's good play by Patalainen. The cross is set up for the second! It's scored by Inges! Magnificent play from Aberdeen, and they're two ahead in 24 minutes.
Superb play to make the goal by Miksu Patalainen, and these Aberdeen supporters jubilant. They couldn't have believed this.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Miller, when he first took over, he had the team competing for titles, playing in Europe as well. And just a year after, one season later, the club actually ended the 94-95 season second bottom of the SPL and actually had to rely on a playoff victory over Dunfermline to stay in the Premier Division.
Miller was unfortunately sacked in the February of 1995 and replaced by Roy Aitken. Despite a Scottish League Cup success in 1995, the club continued to struggle. A succession of managers followed, and with the financial burden of the new stand putting the club into debt for the first time in its history, the directors turned to Stuart Milne, a local businessman whose firm had built the stand and even hired him as a club's chairman.
I've never heard of much like this. It's almost as if, like, you know, we're in that much debt, we can't afford to pay the company that's building the stand. Let's, you know, give the guy a job as chairman or something. But to be fair, I guess they need to do something. As you can see, the club has sort of entered that sort of downward decline and they're trying to do something to stop it. An interesting way they tried to do it is something that was very fashionable at the time, is appointing their first and still to this point their only foreign manager.
In steps Ebbe Skovdal, as he was appointed in 1999 and coincided with some of the heaviest defeats the club's ever seen. Unfortunate for the poor manager.
Yeah, and actually in his first season, the club actually finished rock bottom of the 99-2000 SPL season. But Aberdeen avoided a potential relegation playoff due to Falkirk not meeting the minimum SPL standard requirements, so they couldn't have got promoted anyway. So go back to the thing we said right at the beginning of part one, where they're one of the only clubs to remain like the top division of Scotland for the whole time. And now we've had two very close points to relegation. So as you see, things are not in a good way at this point.
Skovdal was an interesting character, as he was the uncle of Danish international footballers Michael and Brian Laudrup. You can see when you look at his CV why Aberdeen would have hired him. He helped Brøndby turn them into one of the most dominant Danish teams in the 1990s. They would feature in Europe on many occasions in the UEFA Cup and in the UEFA Champions League qualifications, and he won numerous titles in the Danish Superliga and Danish Cup titles too.
You know, one of his finest moments while at Brøndby was actually knocking Liverpool out of the UEFA Cup in 1995. Just had a quick look through that Liverpool team. Just when I looked at it, it seemed like he just had groups of players who were just at very different ends of their career, like either, you know, coming to the end or at the very beginning, and it seemed to lack people in the middle. So you got like David James, Steve McManaman, John Barnes, Jimmy Redknapp, Robbie Fowler, Ian Rush, Stan Collymore.
It's the prime Spice Boy era, 90s Liverpool prime, that all over.
But like we said, despite overseeing one of the poorest sides in Aberdeen's recent history, he actually proved to be quite a popular character with the fans. And he brought in quite a few foreign signings as well. So he's working on very low budget, bringing in free transfers, people on short-term contracts and stuff. I think the fans just appreciated what he was trying to do, kind of thing, despite the, you know, the initial troubles. And some of his signings he brought in got Arild Stavrum, Hakim Zerouli and Roberto Bisconti, who just three we've picked out. And a couple of good stories about Stavrum and Zerouli.
Stavrum in his first season would score 12 goals. And in his second season, he would make it 17, making him the second highest goal scorer in the SPL.
He was really popular with the fans, particularly after he cut and collected some of his trademark hair and posted it to a local journalist who had previously claimed his long hair was holding him back, which is a very good touch. It's instantly going to make you a bit of a cult hero with the fans, I think, giving it to a local negative journalist.
And then Zerouli, he became the first player in Scotland to wear the shirt number 0. It was then outlawed the following season by the SPL and the Premier League in England, but that's such a weird little nugget of information. 0.
I mean, it's solid for his brand, Zerouli, you know. But so yeah, the only guy who's ever worn 0 in British football.
The one highlight of Skovdal's first season at Aberdeen as they would reach the Scottish League Cup final and the Scottish Cup final. They lost both finals, unfortunately, to Celtic and Rangers, respectively.
In the following season, Aberdeen's fortunes really started to turn around and actually a massive improvement domestically and finished 7th in the league, but were knocked out of the 2000-2001 UEFA Cup by Irish team Bohemians on the away goals rule. And this was actually the first time a Scottish club had been knocked out of a European competition by Irish opposition.
So a season of highs and lows, and it would continue onwards with the next year. They improved dramatically and would guide them to 4th place.
Skovdal, they're seeing real progress, and I think this always goes back to the thing of like giving a manager time, which all too often in the modern game as we know it now, it just doesn't happen, does it? And like I say, that first season, he had a pretty terrible time and they very nearly got relegated. They've stuck with him. They've gone from that to a 7th place and now a 4th place. And I think it's just another good advert for, you know, giving managers time, which if that was now, he would have been fired way before that, wouldn't he? Before that 4th place.
He would preside over as the club's academy developed players such as Kevin McNaughton, Russell Anderson, Philip Maguire, striker Darry Mackey, and even goalkeeper Ryan Essen, as they would all join the first team and succeed.
You know, I think there's another reason why the fans took to him. Like we say, he's working on a limited budget, and that also means bringing some young lads through, and, you know, every fan wants to see players coming through the academy, don't they? The downside to all this is with like the Bosman ruling and Aberdeen's substantial debt, which had been building up, a lot of the players would leave on free transfer. I think there's only Russell Anderson, they got £1 million from Sunderland, but all of those other players you mentioned would all end up leaving for free at, you know, over the next couple of seasons. So as the debt's building up, it became sort of more clear that the system Skovdal had used so successfully in Denmark couldn't really be maintained in Aberdeen because they're just losing so much money. They're not making any money from player sales. And
as this situation came to a boil, it became clear that Skovdal couldn't really achieve long-term success at Aberdeen as he had with Brondby. In Skovdal's final season at Aberdeen, they would play Hertha Berlin in the 2002-03 UEFA Cup. So we had to mention this, obviously the hometown team for us.
In the first leg, they drew 0-0 at Pittodrie, but then unfortunately are beaten 1-0 at the Olympic Stadium. So Michael Preetz scored the only goal to win the tie for the Berlin club, despite being down to 10 men. And looking at Aberdeen's team on the night, like one of the names that sort of jumped out to me, Kevin McNaughton, who you mentioned coming through the academy, he actually played 175 times for Aberdeen, also a Cardiff legend, making nearly 300 appearances for them. But of course, in my head, very famous for that collision with Sean Massey, which still to this day I can't believe was an accident. It apparently was an accident.
So as I had showed Mark the Torino highlights, I wanted to give him a little insight into Carboni's amazing performance. Mark had to show me this collision, and it was a little bit on the other end of the spectrum, and I'd never seen it before. And yeah, it's very violent and very random, but yeah.
It's the way the hands come out, like, it's so unfair, like the shoulder and the hands. But yeah, I couldn't believe you'd not seen that. But yeah, Kevin McNaughton, what a guy.
But Hertha's team contained so many interesting names. This is why we had to mention them, so just buckle up as we rattle on through them.
Yeah, where better to start with Hungarian legend and jogging bottom icon, Gabor Király. And you've also got German international Arne Friedrich, who's actually now the sporting director at Hertha. You've got Brazilian maverick Marcelinho, who had an incredible journeyman career. 23 clubs in a career spanning 29 years, and it's a real variety, isn't it?
On the Wikipedia page, the list is so long. It's the longest we've ever seen, because he joins some teams multiple times as well in South America.
And you've got the likes of like Santos, Sao Paulo, Marseille, Gremio, Hertha Berlin, Trabzonspor, Wolfsburg, and loads of South American teams. And like you say, there's some clubs he re-signs and goes back to about 4 or 5 times as well.
I can't believe 29 years for a footballing career. That's incredible. As mentioned before, Michael Preetz scored and would get 93 goals for the Berlin club. However, he was unceremoniously sacked last season from his role as director of football and replaced by, as mentioned, Arne Friedrich.
There's three seasons of underperformance that we can relate to oh so well after living here and going to a few games and seeing them spend so much money, like 130 plus million over a calendar year, five managers in 18 months, only to see them in a couple of relegation battles. Really wasn't good enough. And carrying on through these names, we've also got Josip Simeonic in the Hertha squad, who famously was yellow carded three times before being sent off at the 2006 World Cup by Graham Paul. Classic World Cup moment, this.
Graham Paul would show him a yellow card in the 61st minute for a foul against Harry Kewell. In the 90th minute, Paul again showed Josip a yellow card for a foul, but didn't follow it with the mandatory red card. But then, strangely, in the 93rd minute, Josip's got away with it, and he's blown the final whistle. But then he goes over and angrily pushes Graham Paul, which then he gives him a third yellow card and then is shown a red card. So he's gone away with it. And then weirdly in the 93rd minute goes, oh, I'll go and get a third yellow card, which is just strange.
Yeah, a crazy moment. And I still, one of those like hard to believe it happened and how like none of his like linesman assistants or anything realised. And yeah, crazy, crazy moment.
On the bench for Hertha Berlin against Aberdeen was Pal Dardai, who is now the manager of Hertha Berlin and guided them away from that relegation last season. And lastly, a very young Tomasz Kuszak was in the Hertha squad that year. He started his career there playing 84 games for their B team before being released.
Going on to be picked up by Gary Megson for West Brom, playing the Premier League for various teams, obviously Manchester United there for a while, understudy to Van der Sar, and then you got Watford, Brighton, Wolves and Birmingham, and add that 11 caps for Poland too.
Alongside of losing in the UEFA Cup, the club had a poor domestic start as well, prompting Skovdal to announce his intention to resign. He was replaced by Steve Patterson in the December of 2002.
Drawing comparisons to our Hamburg episode with Branko Zabic's alcohol addiction, Patterson's tenure at Aberdeen was also marred by his addiction to alcohol. And actually, in March 2003, he failed to attend a home game against Dundee due to being too hungover after a night out drinking prior to the game.
Jimmy Calderwood would take over in 2004, and Aberdeen posted more consistent results during that season.
By like the 06-07 season, the club finished in third place in the league and entered the qualifying round for the 07-08 UEFA Cup. Aberdeen defeated Dnipro on the away goals rule to progress, and this was actually the first time they'd won on the away goals rule in European football for 40 years.
They went on to beat FC Copenhagen 4-0, which was the biggest margin of victory and one of Podolski's biggest crowds since the 1980s.
And this set up a meeting with German giants Bayern Munich, once again 25 years after they last faced each other en route to winning the Cup Winners' Cup.
Sit back and let me rattle off some of these classic names from this Bayern Munich team. You got the likes of Oliver Kahn, Willy Sagnol, Lucio, Daniel van Buyten, Martin De Michelis, Philipp Lahm, and a very, very young Mats Hummels.
Add to that, you know, you've got Ribery, Hamit Altintop, Zé Roberto, Mark van Bommel, Jose Sosa, Schweinsteiger, Toni Kroos, Luka Toni, Lukas Podolski, and Miroslav Klose. So a real star-studded team and, you know, some serious forward options there.
That front line is very tasty.
Aberdeen would actually get themselves a very credible draw at home in the first leg. A goal from Josh Walker, who was on loan from Middlesbrough, with a lovely bending effort that beat Michael Rensing, who was actually in goal because Oliver Kahn was ill. The roar of the crowd when it went in was something to behold.
However, Miroslav Klose would typically equalise just 5 minutes later.
And then my boy Sonny Aluko, who I mentioned at the start, Hull City legend, on loan from Birmingham City at the time, put the Dons in front with a great run through the middle of the pitch into the box, flicked it away from a covering Bayern defender for firing home on the volley to put Aberdeen 2-1 up.
The Bavarians would get a little lucky as a Zé Roberto cross would strike the arm of another low knee, Alan Mabry. It's all the low knees getting involved here for Aberdeen, and the ref would give a penalty.
And Altintop's penalty is actually saved by Jamie Langfield, but he puts in the rebound and then he goes off and celebrates as if he's smashed it in the top corner in like a cup final, and it's just like, right, calm down, lad, come on.
Gotta respect the shit out of Zé a little bit though, I did quite enjoy it.
It's disappointing to concede a penalty, a soft penalty at that. But a 2-2 draw, very credible. But, you know, they've got to go to the Allianz Arena and get something.
However, this is where the Bavarian Giants showed their class. 11 minutes in, Lucio just smashes in a short-range free kick from, like, around the middle of the area.
What is it with, like, Brazilian defenders and free kicks? Like, yeah.
They seem to know how to hit them like rockets.
Alex alone was amazing. But, yeah. Next up, another defender, Daniel van Buyten, nods home from a free kick on the 35th minute. And Aberdeen would actually hold on for a big chunk of the game, but with 20 minutes to go, the floodgates opened.
Lukas Podolski reacted quickest to hit home a rebound, then 6 minutes later he added his second with a header. Lovell got a consolation for the Dons as he arrived at the back post from a wide free kick in the 83rd minute, but then Van Bommel will get a fifth for the Bavarians just 2 minutes later.
Aberdeen bow out on the big stage, an aggregate score of 7-3 to Bayern. But when you look through, you know, the squads, and like as we said, like, you know, the Aberdeen squad, they got quite a few low knees in there as well from like your sort of like championship teams at the time. And you've got to put those squads into context. It's a hell of an effort.
In the comments underneath the second leg highlights, you've got a fan commenting, "I had good times, travelled to Munich, I got pished. I loved most of the trip and was going mental when Aberdeen scored." So at least there was some Aberdeen fans having fun in Bavaria.
I mean, it's a hell of an away day. And to be honest, you want to put on a good show and you want your team to do well. But even if you go to Bayern and get hammered, like, you're having a European away day in Munich. Like, come on.
Drinking all that Bavarian beer. Aberdeen got hammered and probably their fans did too.
I imagine, regardless of the result, they were still dancing on the tables in the beer cellars and stuff.
4 minutes to go with regulation time in this first half. Aberdeen through. And look who digs it down. And look who scores for Aberdeen. Johnny Alico for Aberdeen after 41 minutes in this first half. The unthinkable might just be possible here. It's Aberdeen 2, Bayern Munich 1.
But unfortunately, Jimmy Calderwood would be sacked by Aberdeen in May 2009, and just hours after he actually took the club to a fourth place finish and back into Europe. It's believed like the poor domestic cup performances were one of the main reasons why he was dismissed.
Despite those poor domestic cup performances, 4 years later, Aberdeen would make up for this with their first piece of silverware in 23 years.
As they claim the 2013-14 Scottish League Cup, when you say 23 years, that was when they won the same tournament in the 95-96 season, so it's been a long time coming. And on the way, they beat Alloa Athletic, Falkirk, Motherwell. So they get to the semis. Semi-finals are played at Hearts Tynecastle Stadium, and they would score four goals with no reply against St Johnstone. Adam Rooney, Peter Powler and Johnny Hayes getting two. So yeah, we're going to a final.
The final will take place at Celtic Park against North Derby rivals Inverness Caledonian Thistle.
And the game played out like a proper classic final. Nervy, cagey, everyone's afraid to sort of lose the game. The game's best chance fell to Aberdeen striker McGinn after a poor back pass sent him through. He shimmied past the last defender, Meekins, who somehow would recover to perform an incredible last-ditch block to just flick it behind. And the Inverness defence celebrate like a goal, like it tells you everything. It was like a key goal-saving block.
They played out a grueling period of extra time. Half chances and set pieces were the best that either team could muster, and it went into penalties.
Yeah, and you know, keeper Jamie Langfield would prove to be the hero, and he saves Inverness's first penalty. Then Greg Tansey fires their second penalty over the bar. You know, and meanwhile, Aberdeen channel like their inner German penalty nerves, absolutely flawless from the spot. Barry Robson, Nicky Lowe, Scott Vernon, Adam Rooney all score, fire the Dons to their first trophy in a very long time.
The celebrations were amazing, and the commentary clip that we're going to feature is outstanding. Probably one of the best that we've managed to feature in any of the podcasts. It's beautiful.
Stuart Mill knows Aberdeen are so close to that long, long awaited trophy. Six goals in eight appearances before today. Adam Rooney with a chance to win the cup for Aberdeen. And he does! And he does! The almost two decades of pain, hurt and at times ridicule at the hands of others is over for Aberdeen Football Club. McInnes has guided them to silverware within a year of taking the job. The sleeping giant of Scottish football has finally woken from its slumber, and a memorable season so far has a silver lining woven into it now.
We're going to fast forward a few years now to the 2018-2019 season, have a bit of comparison to when Aberdeen were playing sort of Europe's elite during their trophy-laden sort of 80s. And Aberdeen in the Europa League qualifying round, and they draw Premier League side Burnley. This obviously feels a lot more down to earth. You've got two proper community-based clubs. Burnley with this sort of external reputation, as you know, they're just a long ball team from Northern England. I think you've got to put into perspective the like huge financial disparity between Scottish and English football. Even if Burnley finish bottom of the league, they're going to get more TV money than basically all of the Liga clubs apart from the top three, let alone the money Scottish clubs get.
That really puts it into perspective that despite this being Aberdeen versus Burnley, as you've mentioned, little long ball team, Scottish team, this is David versus Goliath, in all honesty, really. Aberdeen have only made one transfer over £1 million, and that was Hans Gilhouse, as we mentioned, in the 89-90 season.
Yeah, and that's still their record fee when we think about like the eye-watering amounts of money going around, especially this summer when you got, you know, likes of Grealish going to Man City for 100 million and all the finances involved with Messi, and to think that Aberdeen still have only made one transfer over £1 million.
However, their second biggest transfer fee, can you guess it, Mark? It is a big man from your neck of the woods.
A big man from mine. Dino. Big Dean Windass. What a legend.
Bingo.
Hull City legend and a great guy. Very good guy. Follows me on Twitter, actually.
Claim to fame there.
If you're listening, Dino, you're a legend. I'll get you a beer next time I'm back in Hull.
And again, in more context, that transfer happened in the 95-96 season. So again, Aberdeen still not really splashing this modern money that you'd imagine, you would think, when it comes to European top flight football. Luckily, they seem to be moving back towards the £1 million mark, with Ronald Hernandez moving from Norwegian side Stabæk last season, joining for just over 800k. And seemingly this is part of the new collaborative approach with Atlanta United in the MLS that we'll mention and come into in much more detail later on.
It's crazy because I remember the £1 million mark for a player, that being such a huge thing in the early 2000s, of like when you started like Football League clubs being like, oh my God, they've signed their first £1 million player. And no disrespect to Scottish football, but I've not really heard that for a long time in football, and to hear that they've still only signed one player for £1 million is crazy.
But moving back to the tie, the pair were drawn to face off against each other in the second qualifying round of the Europa League. Aberdeen fans may be annoyed at getting such a tough draw when teams from the likes of Malta, Iceland and Albania were all possibilities.
First ever time the Clarets would actually face off against Aberdeen in a competitive fixture, and the first leg being at Pittodrie. And of course we know from the last couple of examples, Aberdeen always seem to do very well in the home leg, backed by their fans in these European fixtures.
The game kicked off with tension in the air, as it was a big occasion. Obviously, Aberdeen taking on this big English team full of loads of English TV money. And it was Burnley's first time in Europe for 51 years as well, so they had pressure too.
Wasn't a great start for Burnley. So Nick Pope very early gets a knock and has to come off with an injury. Misery compounded a little bit later as a penalty is awarded to Aberdeen shortly after for a push at the back post. Up steps Gary Mackay-Steven, rolls it in, cool as you like, past Anders Lindegaard, who's come on to replace Pope. Aberdeen have got a dream start.
Aberdeen did well to see out the rest of the first half with little fuss from the Premier League team. However, as the second half plays out, Burnley start to find their groove, create some more chances, and Aberdeen goalkeeper Joe Lewis is called into action more and more.
That's what you'd expect, really, wouldn't you? The Premier League team, to build that intensity, and they're used to such an intense game, for their class to sort of start coming through towards the end of the game.
From an Aberdeen perspective, you could say that Burnley were forced into bringing on big striker Sam Vokes otherwise, but if you're a Burnley fan, you probably say it's a good, smart, tactical decision to bring on the big striker in the hopes of creating something, and unfortunately for the Aberdeen faithful, it did seem to work. As in the 80th minute, James Tarkowski lofts in a long ball towards the box.
Aberdeen don't deal with the flick on, it lands near Vokes, and you just know what's going to happen. He flicks it up over Tommy Hobben and rifles home the volley to get a crucial away goal.
It ended as a 1-1 stalemate, with Aberdeen showing great defensive work, but everything was to play going to Turf Moor.
And it would be Burnley who'd strike first this time, as Chris Wood put Burnley 2-1 up in the tie just after 6 minutes. I'm just thinking back to when you said they were resorted to bring on the big man. I'm just thinking, they're all big men. Burnley striking, Chris Wood, Ashley Barnes, Sam Vokes. I'm sure there's another big guy in there as well.
However, despite all these big men on the field, Aberdeen would fight back into the game. A lofted Macaulay Stevens cross wasn't dealt with by Burnley's massive defence, and it was met with a fantastic improvised overhead kick by Lewis Ferguson in his second ever Aberdeen appearance, and it cancelled out Burnley's away goal advantage too.
Both teams create chances for the rest of the game, both keepers being called into action multiple times, but extra time was needed to settle this tie. Unfortunately for Aberdeen, Burnley managed to make their class show, you could say, and really take their chances, as Jack Cork rose well to nod home in the 102nd minute. Ashley Barnes slots home in the 114th after a penalty for a Scott McKenna handball. Yeah, and from there, the tie was over. Burnley heading to face Istanbul Başakşehir in the next round.
Similar to how the tie against Bayern Munich played out, it feels strange to compare Bayern Munich and Burnley, but hey, Aberdeen fought bravely at home and even more so away for 90 minutes before being undone. It's a real shame, but they could hold their heads high with how they competed, giving the Premier League team a real battle over 150 minutes of football.
It definitely could have easily gone the other way, especially in the 90 for it went to extra time, and we don't want to sound patronising, but it was a solid effort, and they did themselves proud.
And one thing that can be mentioned is both sets of fans would create great atmospheres at both legs, and loads of comments when you watch the highlights underneath with both sets of fans saying good things back and forth to one another. So that's just great to see.
Stephen once more taking on Lothar and getting the cross in. It's an inviting one. It's still not away to the back of the net. What a strike!
Aberdeen level. And it's the 18-year-old Lewis Ferguson on only his second ever Aberdeen appearance who has got it. All square on the night and all square on aggregate.
So now, to bring us up to the present day, we'll move to Aberdeen's most recent European adventure.
Aberdeen are currently taking part in another European journey as part of the inaugural UEFA Europa Conference League Cup competition. This means the Dons have played in nearly every iteration of the European Cup competition, name it, and the Dons have been in it. You've got the European Cup, the Cup Winners' Cup, even the Super Cup, you name it, the Dons have been there.
So the inaugural Conference League would start 10 days before the SPL began, and Aberdeen were drawn against Swedish team BK Backen, who are based in Gothenburg. So this sets up a nice little rendezvous back to the city where they won the Cup Winners' Cup under Fergie.
Aberdeen would show their class in the first leg at Pádraig, winning 5-1. The goals would come from the likes of Andrew Constantine, Christian Ramirez, Conor McLennan, and a brace from Lewis Ferguson.
However, on the nostalgic trip back to Gothenburg, they wouldn't quite have everything their own way and actually lost 2-0 to Häcken, and the Swedish team actually had 10 men as well. But Stephen Glass stated the boys were able to play a bit more carefree because of their performance last week, which, you know, can't take anything away from them.
Next up after that is the Icelandic opponent, Breiðablik, in which Aberdeen did the hard part going away and carving out a 3-2 win in Iceland.
Two goals from Ramirez and Ferguson put them 2 ahead. The hosts actually fought back with 2 goals of their own to draw level just before half time. Shortly into the second half, Aberdeen would grab the much needed third away goal, with Ramirez getting his second of the day, and it's a job done in Iceland.
Back at Pádraig, with the advantage of those 3 away goals, it was a pretty run of the mill 2-1 win. The visitors drew level with a lovely strike just after the Dons took the lead. Ryan Hedges' well-placed finish, assisted by Ramirez, would see the tie finish 5-3 on aggregate, with a trip to Azerbaijani top-seeded team Karabag booked for the next round.
Just to give a bit of context on Karabag, so they're currently nestled in between Feyenoord and Standard Liège on UEFA's club coefficients for some context. But, you know, watching the highlights from the game against Karabag and Aberdeen, you'd think this was a heated rivalry, another Aberdeen rivalry that's not quite local because of all the booing and jeering from the Azerbaijani home crowd. Yeah, and the pitch didn't look great.
I think the pitch must have helped as well, because Karabag would win the tie 1-0. A shimmy and a snapshot from Spanish midfielder Jaime Ramiro would be enough to split the teams. Karabag, with their home advantage, really kept hold of the ball and limited the Dons to just 2 shots on target all night.
But to be fair to Aberdeen, all of the chances that Karabag had were very sort of low quality, low XG shots from range. So, you know, you'd like to think that with the Pádraig atmosphere, like we say, that they always seem to do well there in the European legs that are at home. Hopefully the atmosphere can be nice and loud and give the Aberdeen players that extra few percent and turn the result around.
As we record this second part, Aberdeen's home tie versus Karabag will be played out tomorrow. So fingers crossed they can get that crucial 2-0 win and get themselves into the group stage for the Europa Conference League and keep this European journey going.
Imagine if Glass could add a third star above the Aberdeen badge.
And we're fingers crossed that maybe Aberdeen could be in the same group with Union Berlin, and that would be a great tie to have Aberdeen coming to our hometown.
McLennan takes it down perfectly. Ramirez in the middle, and he doesn't miss those. Clinical Christian Ramirez. And Aberdeen are back in front. And can they hang on to it this time?
So moving away from European competition back to sort of domestic matters and to cover sort of last season and this current season that's just started. So Aberdeen finished fourth in the 2021 SPL season with 56 points, 15 wins, 11 draws, 12 losses, goal difference of -2. And they started the season strong, actually, only losing 1 game in their first 8. However, it ended on a bit of a sour note, losing 4-0 to Rangers, who lifted the trophy for their invincible league win, which is it's got to hurt, hasn't it?
Sore sight to see.
But this season, they've also started well. We're only 3 games into the season, but it's been a positive start so far, beating new firm rival Dundee on the opening day 2-0. They had a lot more of the ball, created some good chances, goals for Jonathan Hayes in the first half, Ramirez scoring again in the second half.
Their second game away at Livingston would prove to be a much harder game. They would have to come from behind as Aberdeen's goalkeeper Joe Lewis came to claim a ball that had been put back into the box after a corner, only for him to grab Bruce Anderson's head just as he nodded it over him, looping into the goal.
Yeah, and in the second half, Aberdeen would show their resilience with a Teddy Jenks strike from just outside the box. They left it late to find the winner, thanks to a speculative effort from Jack McKenzie that somehow beat the Livingston goalkeeper, who fumbled it into his own goal. Tough for him, but the Dons fans don't care, and they ran onto the pitch to celebrate the 94th minute winner.
They deserved the last minute winners. They kept plucking away and creating chances against Livingston. However, despite the heroics in the league, they've been dumped out of the Scottish League Cup at the first round, sent packing early by Raith Rovers from the second tier of Scotland.
That's a slight downer on the season start so far, but you know, hey-ho, they keep going. And in the most recent fixture, most recent to us at the time of recording, they drew 1-1 against Hearts. And it was a lovely little flicked finish, nabbed a point for the Dons and sent the fans wild. And Scott Brown looked like he was having a good time as well.
So far in the SPL, it's 2 wins, 1 draw from their opening 3 games, with Aberdeen sitting in second place. You can't really be drawing too many conclusions after 3 games, but it's wide open as it stands. 6 teams are all on 6 points or more at this early stage of the season.
You'd really like to hope that this carries on through the season and we have like a real battle in Scotland and it's not just one or maybe 2 teams running away with it. It'd be great to see 3 or 4 teams really try and, you know, put a long title fight up over a full season.
So we thought we'd mention about the current manager in the dugout, Stephen Glass.
He's a former player for Aberdeen and was appointed in March 2021 to take over from Derek McInnes. And he joins as part of this new connection with Atlanta United. He was their B team manager, and we'll talk about that connection in a bit more detail in a second.
Stephen Glass, in a recent interview, speaks about what he wants to expect from this new Aberdeen team. He wants them to be very positive, on the front foot, and desperate to win games and be proud to play for the club. That's what he'll guarantee. A team full of energy, to quote him.
Just going through comments we've seen online from Aberdeen fans, a lot of the fans saying like they admit the way he's coming across, they like it and kind of things he's saying, and the football is trying to get the team to play. So it seems pretty positive at the moment.
So one of the new faces on the field for Aberdeen is the controversial and combative midfielder, Scott Brown.
He's joined as a player coach and be working as like an assistant to Glass after making just over 600 appearances for Celtic.
He spoke in his unveiling. Aberdeen is a huge club and everyone knows it. They've done well over the past few seasons and it's always a tough place to come.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's just talking about the weather as well as the football. He says it's going to be a challenge, but he wants to get some attacking football going. However, back in 2015, the Aberdeen fans weren't quite as welcoming when the Celtic captain was pelted with a potodry pie, with a great headline, Celtic captain Scott Brown pelted with potodry pie as he serves the Dons their dinner.
Scott scored the winner at Pittodrie as Celtic ran out 1-0 winners. Brown made a heroic block in his own penalty area before charging on an 80-yard run to get on the end of a Stuart Armstrong cutback. Brown, in a funny little pun, insisted he has no beef with the Dons fans and would go on to state, someone threw a pie at me and I was going to eat it, but it fell out of my hands. That's probably just as well because the gaffer wouldn't have liked it. It has too many carbs in it.
Yeah, and so far it seems that Scott Brown has had like a really positive effect on the team. JJ Bull, an Aberdeen fan, on a recent episode of the TIFO football podcast, spoke about how he's been at the heart of that Celtic team for so long. He's come to Aberdeen and just instantly transformed the way they look. They look comfortable in possession now, strong in the tackle, and he says they look like they're not just going to fall apart like wet origami if you put pressure on them. He celebrates when he gets fouled or tackled. He gets up, pumps his chest out, and it really gets the crowd going and builds that relationship and brings them together with the 11 guys on the pitch.
You can tell he's going to be one of those guys who sets the standard, just like he did at Celtic for all those years.
Carrying on with the American connection, one of the arrivals, we've already mentioned him a couple of times, he's started life very well at Aberdeen, getting 4 goals in 5 games, is US international Christian Ramirez. He joined in June this year from MLS side Houston Dynamo, having played for Los Angeles FC, Minnesota United. And at Minnesota, he scored 74 goals in 147 games. In his college team days, Concordia Eagles in California, he got 41 goals in 42 games, so he... Without wanting to use the cliche, he knows where the goal is.
He would speak in his unveiling interview when joining the club that he'd been watching YouTube videos about how loud Pittodrie gets, and he even mentioned now that his Netflix is in the UK, he's been able to watch the Sir Alex documentary.
Yeah, he says he's excited to learn more about the club and its history. He's a tall, athletic striker, and like I say, hit the ground running. He's got 4 goals in 5 games so far. I think it'll be really one to keep an eye on. I feel like it's a very interesting signing for Aberdeen. I can imagine him, you know, scoring a lot of goals in the SPL.
So we move from a new player in Pittodrie to a now modern Aberdeen legend through and through.
Andrew Constantine now has been at the club for 23 years, one club man, which you've got to love, haven't you? Commanding centre-back. He's risen to become Aberdeen's fourth highest appearance holder with 562 games to his name. He's got 40 goals as well, so, you know, he gets his head on the end of a set piece. And he joins the likes of Willie Miller, McLeish, Bobby Clark, Stuart McKimmy and Jim Leighton in the 500 club for the Dons.
He states in an interview talking about his place at Aberdeen. He says, "You look around at the walls of this place and you see legends from wall to wall. It's truly humbling to be part of these names."
Yeah, and I like that he added in the same video, his toughest opposition that he's ever faced, Miroslav Klose for Bayern Munich, which is a nice name drop, I think. But a really nice quote from him when he says, all he's ever wanted to do is play football, and he's been lucky enough to pull on the red shirt for, you know, 20 years, which is amazing. And it was a dream of his to play for Aberdeen, to play football and to do something that you love. It's truly special. I think that's a great attitude to have.
Just to mention about some of the new players joining Aberdeen this season, they've got English striker J. Emmanuel Thomas, who's joined from Livingston, and young winger Teddy Jenks, joined from Brighton, and Hove Albion on loan too.
Stephen Glass speaks about how excited Emmanuel Thomas was to come here and play for Aberdeen. You know, people want to play for this club. You know, they know the fans are passionate, and he wants people here who really want to play for it.
And so far, as of when we record this, they've managed to keep hold of Lewis Ferguson too, which is a massive bonus. Stephen Glass states, it's important to say that we aren't actively looking to sell our players. I think it's normal that people will like our players, but if they want to buy them, then value needs to be right.
That brings us to sort of a bit of insight on their transfer structure over the last summer. They could have easily brought 6 or 7 players to the squad, you know, to bulk it out, but they're not interested in doing that. They don't want any gambles. They want a couple of players to come in and really affect the team, make it a better place to be. And they also, they don't want to block the pathway for young players. And, you know, that really links back to, you know, when Fergie was there and like the academy they had during those years have produced like some really high quality players. It's a really powerful thing to have. And I think Aberdeen is still very much has a big draw for people. I think as young players, if they know that they could get into the first team of Aberdeen, if they're good enough, then yeah, I think that's a great approach to have.
Dave Cormack, the chairman of Aberdeen, states, we want signings to bring value to Aberdeen today. So it's always positive to hear when clubs have this like focused one-track mind on how they want to move the club forward. It looks like they're going in the right direction.
In carrying on this sort of positive feeling that seems to be flowing through the club, Aberdeen have also recently renovated the Pittodrie Stadium post-COVID with quite a lot of changes for when the fans come back, and they've added some great murals and artwork the walls around the stadium. Most notably the Merkland Road end, you can now see like a big thing of soul, spirit, tradition. And they have loads of other pieces that pay homage to the huge history that we've discussed over these last hour and a bit so far.
That soul, spirit, tradition logo coming from Alfredo Di Stefano's famous quote post Cup Winners' Cup victory. And then add to this a newly refurbished pitch, upgrading the toilets and kiosks around, and a bunch of fresh new red seats in the stands too.
There are plans to potentially move away from Pittodrie. The club has stated, you know, Pittodrie as it is wouldn't get its safety certificates for European fixtures, and the old stadium isn't fit for purpose as they can't expand it. It's been surrounded by residential property and then the golf course and stuff. And they've produced a very impressive looking CGI rendering of a £50 million new home called the Kingsford Stadium. And this new place would also have a new club heritage museum, conference rooms, and a new fan bar.
All of this, you can see, is adding revenue to the club, giving them new ways to earn money and hopefully push themselves forward. Throughout the research of when we were looking back at the 1980s with Sir Alex Ferguson's period, they didn't have any home training base. So now, having this impressive potential complex of training pitches would be a real bonus to the Aberdonians.
Especially if they're looking to develop young talent as well. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, Derek Cormack, the chairman, has said that, you know, they've lost around £8 million of potential funding for this project, which has gone into literally just surviving lockdown and COVID. But in January 2021, contrary to that, headlines have said that, you know, people high up at Aberdeen are still looking to leave Pittodrie in the relative near future, despite the chief's speculation on a U-turn.
There's been a defiant reaction in a form of a protest of Aberdeen moving stadiums, with the No to the Kingsford Stadium group raising £66,000 against the plans for the new 20,000-seater stadium.
The area that they've got planning permission from Aberdeen City Council is quite a bit out of town compared to Pittodrie, but it is on a main road, and some fans have said, like, you know, if you live either north or south of the city, it'll still be easy to get to, and it probably won't be as windy too. I think no fan is ever happy to leave like your stadium, is it? Like, especially if it's a new modern place. And I think it really depends on how it's done, and giving the new stadium like some soul so it doesn't feel like a Lego set.
To be leaving a place full of history and all those amazing titles and the countless nostalgic trophies brought to the club by Sir Alex Ferguson and many other managers, yeah, it's going to be tough, but and it has to be done in a right way to move to a new stadium. But as they've mentioned, they want to bring some of that history along with them with the new club heritage museum. So maybe that brings a little bit of balance to it. In one video specifically, George Ewell, the vice chairman, shows off a room absolutely stuffed full of mementos, trinkets, photos and shirts from decades of matches from Pittodrie. And there's just no way of presenting or putting these things on public display, which is a real shame because they're just so full of history.
Yeah, so that, you know, that's one positive aspect to look at. Like, they could put some of this history on display. I think you only have to look at like the huge contrast of how how Arsenal moved stadiums and how all that was treated, and then how the stuff at West Ham played out. And I think chalk and cheese of how you go about moving a stadium, respecting the history, the way that how Highbury is now is just incredible. Like the whole set of flats and stuff, and the fact that Upton Park was literally just razed to the ground by bulldozers and there's nothing left.
It was within like weeks of them leaving as well, which was just awful.
And after looking around, like, we have found, you know, there is some fans that are in favour of it, or not as against it anyway, and that, you know, they say about how it's a big thing for the community, it'll bring investment, it'll bring in jobs, of course, to Aberdeen. So yeah, there's definitely two ways of looking at it.
One of the fans even mentions that they think the problem with them not being able to move is ignorance born out of misunderstanding of what modern football is. Obviously now modern football is more of a family day out. You get your young lads who want to go and have a drink and have a sing and song, but we're not stuck in the 80s. People will come for the community, they'll come to the area with their families, stay in the hotels, stay in the places around the stadium, spend their money in. He can only see positives, this one fan particularly.
Yeah, George, you'll sort of stay in. We know that it's loved and cherished by the fans, but it is an old stadium. So, yeah, to round it out, leaving Pittodrie is going to be very hard for such a historic club like Aberdeen if it does happen. And of course, like we said earlier, like, Aberdeen are the only club in Scotland to win a UEFA trophy on their home patch, the Super Cup against Hamburg. So, yeah, it'll be a very sad occasion if it does happen.
But I'm sure, hopefully, they can learn from the likes of Arsenal and West Ham and make it a successful transfer over to the new stadium, if and when it happens. One little headache they might have to deal with when it regards this new stadium move is, where are they going to put this newly announced Sir Alex Ferguson statue?
Yeah, you know, it might be a case of getting it up and then having to cut it down and drive it up the main road to the new stadium. And the new statue is based on a photo of Sir Alex celebrating Aberdeen's 1980 title success at Easter Road.
After the 5-0 demolition of Hibernian in their first league title win. Ferguson's quote has been saying he's particularly pleased with the image the club has chosen to base the statue on. And with the choice of sculptor, whose recent work is incredibly lifelike, he can't wait to see it, and we can't either.
The sculptor has actually previously created statues for the Beatles in Liverpool, Sir David Attenborough, Stanley Matthews, our old friend from our first episode, and Muhammad Ali.
A real collection of people there, and weirdly linking Sir Alex Ferguson back with Liverpool there with the Beatles. So another weird connection.
After celebrating past glories and the history of the club, we now look to the future. And in November 2019, MLS side Atlanta United acquired 10% of Aberdeen for £2 million as part of a strategic alliance between the two clubs.
As part of the deal, Vice Chairman Dave Cormack became the chairman of the club, replacing Stuart Milne, who became chairman after they couldn't afford to build the North Stand. Atlanta United president David Eales took a seat on the Aberdeen's board of directors too.
And there was changes on the managerial bench as well, with Derek McInnes leaving after 8 years in charge. And as we mentioned earlier, it was replaced by former player Stephen Glass, who'd come from Atlanta United 2. He was the manager of the B team.
This new Atlanta United influence come American link seems most prominent with the recent transfers. The likes of Christian Ramirez and English defender Jack Gurr, who came from Atlanta as well.
And one of the main benefits and attractions for Atlanta United is being in Scotland. They've got people on the ground now. They can get some intelligence on the European market. They obviously, in America, they focus a lot on the South American market, and they've had success on players coming in there, but now they're going to turn their eye to maybe more players from Britain itself, and also just being easily able to get scouts across. I think the thing that stood out to me and you quite a lot is this kind of thing usually happens either way around. It's a big European club buying a stake, or buying a full foreign club or American club. Seeing Man City, the whole City Group thing with New York City, Troyes, Melbourne City, Girona. However, I think this is the first time we've seen a US club invest, especially in a British team anyway.
Atlanta United seem confident to continue this process. If the partnership with Aberdeen is successful, they'll surely look to replicate that in another country, in another league, with another club. However, one specific angle of this collaboration seems to involve Aberdeen's new potential home, the Kingford. Eel stated that they've just built their brand new Mercedes-Benz Stadium, one of the best stadiums in the world. This area we think we can help with our expertise in terms of best practice in building the new stadium. It's a real breathtaker, that massive Mercedes-Benz Stadium. If you haven't seen it, go check it out on Google. It is huge, and it is just like, wow.
It's just quite fascinating to imagine what this link could mean, or what it could do for the club in the future, for both clubs really, but especially for Aberdeen, and seeing how they're used by, are they going to keep this? Are we going to see more players from the MLS potentially join Aberdeen and play in Scotland? It's very interesting, and I think quite exciting time.
If I was Aberdeen manager on Football Manager, I'd be rinsing the affiliate club link and just getting as many loans in from the MLS as possible just to improve the squad.
I wonder if Landon Donovan would come out of retirement or something. That'd be cool to see.
Tim Howard going in goal, maybe.
But yeah, the Atlanta guys, obviously, they do have a plan. And one of the things they've spoke about is they're wanting to be UEFA top 100 club in terms of the coefficients. And they've had a period of relative success and stability in terms of qualifying for Europe regularly, getting to that third qualifying stage. But they're looking to go a couple of steps further and really boost their coefficient and jump up the rankings.
Currently in 99th place and 100th place is Union Berlin and Hertha Berlin back-to-back, funny enough. So our hometown club once again brought right back to us.
To put that into context, Aberdeen are currently in 156th place, and that's below some of these teams, FC Vaduz from Liechtenstein and above FK Sucheska from Montenegro. And I think this probably speaks quite a lot about where the Scottish game is at the moment in terms of its placement in the European leagues. But also, Steve Gunn said about, you know, they just want to have a couple of times to get past that third qualifying stage, go a few steps further, they would shoot right up that. So I think it's ambitious, but it's to get from 156th place to just outside the top 100. If you have a couple of good runs, it's not that difficult, but getting further up that is going to be a lot harder, obviously.
For added context, Rangers are currently 43rd in the coefficient, in between CSKA Moscow and Red Star Belgrade, and Celtic are 50th, with Copenhagen and FC Krasnodar either side of them too. Mixing it with these massive names just like that is something surely Aberdeen would love to aspire to, and hopefully, with a couple of runs, fingers crossed for tomorrow night, and they can improve and keep running up this coefficient ladder.
Really exciting times, I think, and to see what the American link can achieve, and you know, if they can hit this top 100 target would be great, and it would be great to sort of have a proper look back in two or three seasons and see how they've progressed.
From here we move into our conclusion about Aberdeen Football Club. The club seems to be moving in a really interesting way with loads of positives, as we've already mentioned. The new manager, the new approach in transfers, the potential new stadium, and this allegiance with Atlanta United. It's all moving in a really good direction.
Very positive. And it seems like they've got money as well. And maybe we'll see player transfers creeping up over that £1 million, hopefully. Like I say, it's not all about the money, but it'd be cool to see one or two additions each season, and you know, the academy players keep coming through. But one thing we found really unique, while we've been doing the research, is seeing the way the club speaks to the fans, the kind of dialogue they have with their fans. You know, not many clubs have an hour-long podcast or a video with the current manager, director of football, the chairman, where they ask questions, whatever they want. So that's really cool. And it's a million miles away from what we saw with the Oystons at Blackpool, for example.
Or even the owners of the Super League 6 in the UK, which had to have literal mass protests to get this awful abomination cancelled. So it's a really positive and hopefully something that can grow amongst European football as well.
Fingers crossed for them for the next season. Thanks to everyone for listening to the story about Aberdeen and the fans. Yeah, good luck to you.
Mackie into Diamond. Now Shawnee Aluko in the centre, trying to get it down, trying to spin, trying to get a shot. Lays it back to Josh Walker! Yeah! Josh Walker with the goal! Oh, Aberdeen have the lead against the best team in Germany! Given Aberdeen the lead.
So as we come to the end of part two of our episode diving into the Dons, we would like to link into the next team we're going to be covering just coming up.
So it's a team once again that had been mentioned along the way, along the journey, and Aberdeen lost to this team in the semi-finals of the Cup Winners' Cup in the 83-84 season. So have a listen back. You can't remember who it is. Let us know what you think. Give us a shout out for what you're predicting for the next episode. And any clubs, you know, give us some suggestions of clubs you want us to cover in the future. It's great to hear it. And yeah, thank you.
So thank you to all the listeners. Thank you to all the fans who got in touch. And if you could do us a favour, rate us on Apple Podcasts, as that really helps the algorithms and all that type of stuff, as well as sharing with your fellow football fans. Make sure to check out our social media pages on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook to keep up to date with everything to do with the Journeyman and loads of footballing news. And apart from that, that's part two here at Podordry. This is Aberdeen. I'm Joseph Corlett.
I'm Mark Reeve.
See you all next time for part four of the Journeyman podcast.
See you next time.